customers, quote, to express their gratitude by leaving tips and notes of thanks for hotel room attendants. Shriver says she hopes the voluntary tips, quote, will make these women feel validated. Is that sweet or what? Does she at least urge that this tip be the standard 15% to 20% we give at restaurants? No, $1 to $5 per night stay is recommended. Let's see, at about $250 a day for a Marriott room, even $5 is a sad 2% expression of gratitude. As for customers leaving a little thank you note, imagine trying to buy a bologna sandwich with that. This is Jim Hightower saying, how about this? Instead of paying $9 million a year to Marriott CEO, make him rely on customer tips and see how validated he feels.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome to The Real Deal in Sports, a show about the cultural, social, political, spiritual, and economic impact of sports on the world at large. I'm Josh Chetwin, and thanks for listening in. We also hope you'll contribute with questions and comments, as our phone lines, as always, are open. You can reach us at 303-442-4242. My topic today is gambling and fantasy sports games. For so long, these types of draft-your-own-team competitions were considered a pretty low-stakes sideshow to the sports we watch. But increasingly, that's changing as we're looking at huge amounts of money shifting hands thanks to fantasy contests. The amounts are so big, we may be stepping into an era where online fantasy games match or surpass traditional sports gambling as the place where fans spend large amounts of their hard-earned cash. Here's how the wagering on these fantasy contests work. Sports enthusiasts put down real money, pick players to make up a one-day or one-week team, depending on the sport, and if their chosen players outperform those of other online competitors, they can make money. But if they lose, they cough up what's effectively an entry fee. Now, lawmakers are conflicted about whether this activity should be considered gambling. The federal government's Unlawful Internet Gambling Act carves out fantasy sports as an exception to a ban on betting online, saying these drafting games are skill activities. But a number of states, like Arizona, Louisiana, Iowa, Montana, and Washington, have statutes that appear to prohibit this type of wagering. One thing we can be certain of, some participants are losing large sums of money. For instance, a story on ABC News' website in September chronicled how a 27-year-old fantasy fanatic lost $70,000 in these types of leagues. Even with some states holding out, this is a business segment that's becoming a powerful player in the sports realm. Last week, the NBA announced it's taking an equity stake in the fantasy sports gaming company FanDuel. In addition, FanDuel's biggest competitor, DraftKings, announced the same day that it will embark on a partnership with the NHL. Both these companies are well-funded and raking in cash. FanDuel, for instance, is expecting to bring in $60 million in profit in 2014, up from just $14 million a year ago. Further adding intrigue to these companies' place on this landscape, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver last week endorsed nationwide sports gambling, which is currently an activity vastly limited in the United States. Companies like FanDuel and DraftKings will undoubtedly play a role in shaping that discussion. After all, they have a vested interest in seeing traditional sports wagering remain limited in this country. I'll delve into those and other issues with my guests. I'd like to start with Darren Heitner. Darren is a contributing writer at Forbes.com. He covers all forms of sports business, and in particular, he's penned numerous articles on the fantasy sports space. Among a number of other endeavors, Darren is also a sports and entertainment attorney at his own Florida-based law practice, Heitner Legal. Darren, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. That was a fantastic overview.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Darren, I know you're very familiar with this space, and I'm hoping that you can sort of outline a little bit more in detail what these one-day and one-week games are, because the big issue here is, in my mind, about whether this is really a skill game or whether this is the type of thing that is more similar to gambling or poker or blackjack.
And you're right. Skill is the biggest questions surrounding these types of games. And that's where there are some struggles right now between various states. As you mentioned, there is a federal law that effectively provides a carve-out for the FanDuel's, DraftKings, and every other daily or weekly fantasy game, which is separate and apart from what is more traditional. These season-long games have been offered by Yahoo, CBS, ESPN, and other major outlets for a number of years. So the real issue here is, outside of the federal government, how are the states treating it? And by and large, most states just haven't even provided an opinion on it, and thus these sites like FanDuel and DraftKings are comfortable with operating within the vast majority of those states. However, as you also mentioned, there are certain states that have come out and said that we will not allow these types of contests to take place within our borders. And I think that the main issue is how these states determine or the analysis that they go through with regards to the element of chance versus skill. There are different types of tests that may be applied. The most largely used test is known as a dominant factor test. So as long as it is determined that skill predominates over chance, the states that ascribe to this particular type of test will largely allow this type of gameplay, or at least not intervene at this point in time. But then there are certain states that ascribe to the any chance test. As long as chance is an element, even if it's just 1% of the calculation, these states say, no, it's not allowable within our borders. And that's where you see certain states, as you mentioned, for instance, Arizona being one of them, where these types of daily or weekly fantasy sports sites are not allowed. What's interesting is that you also have a few states, one of them being my state of Florida, that has issued an advisory opinion that has been in existence for a number of years that seems to indicate that any type of fantasy-related play is construed as gambling. Yet the advisory opinion and the statute that pretty much mirrors that advisory opinion has never been enforced. And thus, these fantasy gaming websites, even the big ones like a Yahoo that has existed for a number of years, continue to operate within the borders. I think over the next few years, especially with the NBA getting involved with FanDuel, not only from a partnership related to promotion, but also with an investment in the operation, I think now you're going to see a lot more states and maybe even the federal government once again look at this particular issue. And if they allow these daily and weekly fantasy sites to continue to operate, expect that these states will get involved from a taxation standpoint. They're going to want some sort of interest in this and to be able to capitalize off the same.
You know, I was looking at a couple of websites from these types of games, and one of them pointed out the fact that the unpredictability, particularly in football, and really football is probably the biggest driver, although we're discussing the NBA and the NHL getting more and more involved. But with football, that these single week games, there is so much unpredictability, and that's what excites people into this, which is that you never know what's going to happen. It's not as certain, and it's not as big a slog, certainly, as being involved with a year-long event. And to me, that's where we're getting in the issue of this chance element. I mean, do you agree with that we're really looking at these type of games being very different from the season-long because the level of chance is heightened so much?
Well, I'm not necessarily on board with that assessment. I mean, certainly you have the issue of different factors having an influence on the outcome of certain games. You have different sort of weather patterns. A player could injure himself during the game, which has a larger effect on that particular week or day for the daily fantasy game operation as opposed to the season-long operation if, in fact, it's not a season-long ending injury. But that said, you look at a site like Yahoo, which has done a very good job at predicting the amount of points that will be scored by a particular player on any given week. And, of course, there are anomalies. You'll find a player who is predicted to have a very low amount of points receive a large amount and vice versa. But by and large, I find that, you know, these types of prediction sites, including Yahoo within its own game, and then you have the Roto Grinders and others that are quote-unquote experts in the space, they do a very remarkable job of predicting how these players will do. And I think that takes a lot of chance out of the equation. I mean, this now becomes somewhat of a skill-related operation, and I think it's easily justifiable that this is not necessarily, of course there is chance involved, but if you look back to that dominant factor test, is it above 50%? If you have to look at it from the outside in, does chance predominate over skill? And I would take the position that it does not.
Just a reminder, you are listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU Radio, Denver Boulder. Our topic today is gambling and fantasy sports. My guest is Darren Heitner, who is a contributing writer at Forbes.com, also an attorney. And we'd love to hear your opinion, so please call in at 303-442-4242. Darren, even if you step away from this issue of chance, there is certainly increasingly the possibility of conflict of interest going on here. You now have the NBA getting involved in FanDuel as an equity partner in that company. And you made a really interesting point, I thought, in an article you recently wrote in Forbes.com about the NHL and how they are endorsing another league, DraftKings. And certain teams have partnered with DraftKings, other types of fantasy sites, but they're not allowing players to do so. So they clearly see there's a concern potentially with players being involved with these pseudo-potential gambling sites, but they're getting involved too. How much of a concern is that?
Well, I thought that it was really interesting, the statement that the NHL provided to me when I was talking to executives about their multi-year deal with DraftKings. And the NHL basically told me that they're allowing players within the sport to endorse free fantasy games, but those same players are not permitted to participate in advertising related to sports gaming. Now, the NHL, I think, was very cautious in the way that it stated that particular position. Is this considered sports gaming or gambling? They didn't actually say that the players cannot be involved with advertising daily or weekly fantasy sports operations. And if they took that position, it would be contrary to the position that the other sports leagues have taken. I represent some athletes. I'm in negotiations with these daily fantasy sports operators. There's a lot of money to be made by athletes, and now we're seeing the teams and the leagues as well getting involved in these partnerships with the different fantasy operations. You know, certainly the NHL and every other league wants to be very careful if, in fact, any of the states where these games are being operated or even the federal government does an about-face and actually changes its position on the legality of these teams or actually comes out and provides its opinion because, as I said, the vast majority of the states just have not even gotten involved and have not provided an opinion on it. But I did think that it was interesting, at a minimum, that the NHL did come out and say that they are not necessarily in favor of their athletes endorsing these particular operations.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, though. I mean, as these businesses start to grow and you're seeing that net revenue for FanDuel going to $60 million from $14 million, I mean, these are companies that are starting to grow very quickly. Isn't there a possibility at some level for there to be actions created with players? I mean, we've seen point shaving in basketball. Obviously, baseball has a long history, well far back, about gambling issues, even though Pete Rose is another one. That somehow these games and individual players who can make such a huge difference on fantasy rosters could get involved in some sort of scandal. I mean, it seems that we're building to a point where that could be a legitimate issue.
The integrity of the game argument, which has been used by sports leagues and the NCAA against the most recent edition and for many years against New Jersey, the state of Delaware, and others that have tried to implement a scheme of sports betting within their borders. Now, what's interesting there is that in that particular situation, and it's still playing out with New Jersey and Governor Chris Christie, is you have the leagues that have taken the position that sports betting should not be allowable because that type of betting could have a negative effect on the integrity of the game, and it could potentially lead to players point shaving, referees calling a game a certain way, et cetera. And it's interesting that you just don't have that with fantasy sports. And certainly, the disposition of the leagues has changed over time. It wasn't too long ago that Major League Baseball was very fiercely against the implementation of these daily and weekly fantasy sports operations. Meanwhile, Major League Baseball ended up becoming the very first league to enter into a partnership with one of these daily fantasy sports operations, that being DraftKings. And then, as you mentioned, DraftKings last week entered into a partnership with the NHL, and FanDuel entered into a partnership with the NBA, the only big four American sports league that has not yet entered into one of these partnerships is the NFL. And it probably will not be long until the NFL does decide to make some money by entering into one of these partnerships. So I think that's where you have the differentiating factor, which is that these leagues are now in bed with these daily fantasy sports operations. So they can't take the same position that they do with the sports betting bans by saying that there is this strong potential that with sports betting there's going to be a lack of integrity surrounding the games, because they're now part and parcel. And especially the NBA, with its investment in FanDuel, it can't now do an about-face and say, well, we're concerned about the way that this may affect the integrity of the game. And I think that it would be improper, especially after getting involved in these contractual relationships, for them to do that, because these leagues have seen the dramatic increase in fan favor and interest in the sports based on the proliferation of fantasy. And for them to take a different position will be going against their best interests, which is to maintain that support from the fans and actually grow the interest among casual fans, including a very large female demographic that have become interested in sports just because of fantasy alone.
But Darren, isn't this a bit of a Faustian bargain? Just because they're getting involved, and they are getting involved for legitimate reasons that you point out, that it is helping their games, their respective games, that doesn't diminish the possibility that you could have a player who might be in financial, misstraits, who then gets into a deal with a gambler who's doing these fantasy games. And I point this out because I think in these fantasy games, it's all the more possible for one player to skew the results of a particular game. I think it's a little more difficult when you're talking about teams. And, I recently saw an ESPN 30 for 30 on the Boston College point shaving scandal, and you needed multiple players involved. And even then, it wasn't clear whether or not this gambling effort was going to work in terms of the point shaving. But it seems that for this type of action, that there is a far greater chance. So just because the leagues are saying, okay, we don't see as big of a problem, at least tacitly saying that, because they're not necessarily, stepping away from it. In fact, they're embracing it. That doesn't mean there's less of a chance of it occurring, is it?
I'm not buying it. Under the UIGEA, the federal act that provides the carve-out for fantasy sports, there are certain elements that must be present in order for that carve-out to apply. And one of those elements is you can't be able to pick a team in fantasy that is made up entirely of a roster from a particular team. And that's obviously in an effort to try to prevent the type of scenario that you're alluding to. I mean, I don't see, if we're talking, let's say, about a basketball team, there are five starters on that basketball team who are playing the vast majority of that game. If you have a daily fantasy sports operation, and I haven't seen any that are less that include a roster that are less than five players on that particular team, if we're talking about those players, really I don't see how one particular player can skew the outcome in such a way any differently than some sort of illegal sports betting or, some under the table type of offer to that player. So I think it's a stretch to believe that because of the proliferation of these types of fantasy games, that a particular individual who is wagering a significant amount of money on a game, and realize that typically the amount of money waged on these types of games are rather small. It's the prize payouts that are large, and that's due to the reality that a lot of these contests involve a vast number of players. I just don't see that a particular individual will be able to influence the game in such a way to have a player change his performance because there's some under-the-table payout. Either way, whether it's sports gambling or a player taking that type of money to benefit that daily fantasy player, the athlete is doing an illegal act. So the athlete is taking an exorbitant risk. I don't think there's any way to completely filter that out, that potential out of professional sports. But I also don't think that daily fantasy in some way exacerbates the potential problem.
Just a reminder, you're listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU Radio, Boulder, Denver. Our topic today is gambling and fantasy sports. Do you believe that fantasy sports are truly different from gambling, or should it be treated like blackjack or poker? And if so, why? And should all forms of sports gambling be legalized anyway? My guest is Darren Heitner, a sports and entertainment attorney who also writes on sports business for Forbes.com. Please join the conversation. You can call us at 303-442-4242. Darren, obviously this is an even more complicated issue than fantasy sports because of what's going on in the general sports gambling area. There are a lot of laws that prevent it, online particularly, and in terms of many, many, most jurisdictions in the United States. Efforts, as you alluded to, in New Jersey are currently going through the legal system to try and allow sports books to occur there. How does this type of business, the sports fantasy business, impact that? It's just interesting that Adam Silver, the NBA's commissioner, came out saying that sports gambling should be legal and just regulated, and then he also has this interest now in this type of fantasy sports, which I think these are competing businesses on some level.
You know, I don't think so. I had a very interesting conversation with a fantasy sports operator based in the UK just yesterday. They're about to announce a new partnership in December. I'm not going to reveal that at this point, but thankfully I'll be able to have the exclusive on Forbes. But I digress. The point is that this particular company has a very large interest, a very large base in the UK, in Ireland, and is expanding to Italy. And one of the questions that I had was, you know, how are you having this type of success even though overseas in Europe it is very legal to bet on the outcome of sports? And this particular operation has been able to separate itself from the major operations in the United States because it focuses on the sport of soccer, which happens to have more fans across the world. So what it told me was that, yeah, the company recognizes that sports betting is legal in many of these jurisdictions. In fact, it's so easy to bet in sports in these jurisdictions that there are mobile apps that exist, and with a click, you know, of a single button, you can wage money on the outcome of a particular game, which you can't do here outside of Las Vegas. And just based on the metrics, based on the numbers alone for this startup, which started less than a year ago, that was the proof in the pudding, which is that despite the fact that that sports betting is allowed in these jurisdictions, daily fantasy, weekly fantasy, is thriving. That fans have a craving for this type of gameplay, whether or not sports betting is legalized. So I think that Commissioner Adam Silver's position is refreshing as somebody who has long been a proponent of allowing sports betting within the various jurisdictions within the United States. And at the same time, I don't think that it would necessarily – I don't think that it's counter to the league's new partnership with FanDuel. I think that FanDuel and other daily fantasy sites can certainly thrive in conjunction with the existence of widespread sports betting.
We have our first caller. It's Deborah in Denver. Deborah, you're on KGNU Radio.
Hi. I'm sorry to need more education, but I do. So what I understand about fantasy sports is that you bet on, let's say, a fantasy roster of 11 players or whatever in football, and you see how they're going to do that week, like how many tackles, whatever it is, right? And so because you know the players so well. And so I don't understand why your guest said that no one could cheat. I mean, if a tackle or a quarterback or something is going to make a lot of money, why wouldn't he have a rotten day like Peyton Manning did a few weeks ago? I mean, why wouldn't he do that? I don't understand. I know you did lots of bettors and you think it's spread out, but maybe the company would, I don't know. It just seems like human nature, there would still be a temptation to make money. I guess I don't know enough about... Go ahead.
Sure, I think there's a variety of factors at play. First and foremost, you look at a guy like Peyton Manning, who has a nice contract in play with the Broncos, a large portion of it being guaranteed. And would he ever want to basically risk the non-guaranteed portion of that contract through poor play, which also would affect his off-field pursuits, where he makes a lot of money in marketing and endorsing various products and services?
What about a less well-known player, like a tackle or something? It's never going to make a ton more.
Or along Deborah's lines, what a running back who might be third string because of injuries playing, who might be playing the minimum, doesn't have off-field prospects beyond this, or perhaps has gotten into trouble off-field and needs to somehow make good with someone.
Sure. And I think that there are many answers to that question as well. First of all, a third-string running back would be even more incentivized to play well if that player ever wants to have a real contract and a long lifespan within the NFL. Second of all, realize that there are many players on an NFL team, and the likelihood of one individual player's performance having a substantial effect on the end result of the game is minimal. And further, how many people actually, if we're talking about daily fantasy sports, how many people are actually picking up that third-string running back to perform on the team on any given day? And I think finally is the point that when we're discussing the potential of an individual player having a lackluster performance because of a potential big payday, how does that really have anything to do with daily or weekly fantasy sports? I mean, why is an individual not prevented currently from doing that for somebody based in Las Vegas who wants to put a substantial bet on the opposing team? So I don't think that's a daily or weekly fantasy sports issue. I think that's just an inherent issue with professional sports as a whole, that there's always that very, very, very small likelihood that any individual can have an effect on the outcome of a game because of an influence over a particular player. Elements involved.
I hear that, but my question is, we're not talking about a team winning. We're talking about one player getting more tackles or less tackles, right? Isn't that the way it's done?
It's usually done with offensive players, but Deborah, I hear what you're saying, which is when you're looking at a football squad of 22 players, 11 offense, 11 defense, it's a smaller number of players that usually comprise a fantasy roster. One player can actually shift the result much more differently in these weekly and daily games than would be the case in an actual game, which would be sort of under the auspices of maybe betting for or against a team. Is that, Deborah, is that what you're getting at? That individual player has a greater impact.
All right.
And so hypothetical situation, I mean, it would take so many pieces falling into place in a very short amount of time to pull something like this off, and I just don't see it happening. Let's just say, hypothetically, you have one individual with five players and another individual with another five players, and they're head-to-head on a given week. And again, I don't see a guy like Peyton Manning ever doing something like this, but let's say it's that third-string running back who happens to be starting for the Minnesota Vikings in an upcoming week. The individual competing against that other individual who has the third-string running back would have to first know that his opponent is starting that third-string running back and then somehow get to the third-string running back in time and put a significant amount of money on the table to influence that third-string running back to basically give up on the game. I don't see it. And certainly there's always potential for any sort of hypothetical becoming true. But I honestly, in today's day and age, I just don't see something like that happening.
Okay, this is the last question. I'm sorry. So the fantasy part is only on offensive players and a few, like five, you could have just five players. And that's it? I never played this game or whatever you're talking about. So you pick five like offensive players, and that's it.
Go ahead, Darren. You can explain.
typically when we're talking about NFL-style gameplay, you're picking offensive players and not offensive lines. You're talking about wide receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, tight ends. And then you have the potential of picking a defense altogether, which will look at the amount of sacks, interceptions, fumble recoveries, and oftentimes special teams touchdowns, et cetera. So you're typically not picking individual defensive players in this type of gameplay. And also, the amount of players that you're picking just depends on the operator and the style of play.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. Just a reminder to anyone listening out there, we'd love to hear your opinions or comments, as Deborah just offered. So please feel free to call in at 303-442-4242. Darren, let's step back away from this possibility of fixing games. Obviously, I think we've now addressed it pretty comprehensively. But go back to the idea of the skill element related to this, because as a public policy matter, it seems that the United States at this point, whether you agree or disagree, that we feel a little uncomfortable with games that require a little bit too much unpredictability and putting money down on it, that we feel that this is something that we don't want to drive. I sense that you have feelings about whether that should be allowed or not. But talking about these games in general and your experience with them, and looking at the states about where skill needs to be, you know, more than 50%. Do you understand that argument at all, or do you buy that argument at all? There's a lot of skill involved with games like poker and blackjack, certainly, but those games are often considered less skill and more unpredictable.
So I guess I do agree, not necessarily with blackjack, but with poker, that there is a large element of skill involved. And certainly with fantasy, I do. I've been studying this particular area for many years, and over those years, I've come to find that there are particular players who have just generated a significant amount of success. And when I look at the number of games being played and their percentage of wins versus losses, it makes me realize that, you know, when you have a large sample size, or at least a good enough number of games played by a particular individual, and there's a substantial amount of more wins than losses, something's happening there. It's not just chance. So there, to me, there's a large skill element involved. And as I mentioned before, I think the fact that there are these predictive tools in place that do a very good job, and also many experts in this space these days who also do a fine job of predicting how players will do, that takes away a large element of that chance. It's not as though you're just rolling dice and seeing and picking a team out of the thin air and hoping for the best. You know, people put in a significant amount of time in research and analysis to determine what players are the best fit in any given week. And I think because of that, even if chance is an element, and of course it is to an extent, I think skill predominates.
Why do you think that this element needs the financial reward or potential loss? Anyone who has ever seen the show The League on FXX, you know, popular show, you could see, and anyone who's ever played fantasy sports, that there is often enough at stake without the financial carrot out there to keep people excited about fantasy sports. What do you think it is about the allure of this? Because I wonder to what extent, and you see the commercials, and they're becoming more and more pervasive as FanDuel and DraftKings become more and more successful, that I sense that what they're selling is the easy money on some level. That, you know, hey, you can put in the small entry fee and you can make $1 million. And literally, I remember, I think it was FanDuel, though it might have been DraftKings, commercial saying, and you're going to live the easy life. It's almost right. A lottery mentality to the way it's being sold, which gives the feel more of the unpredictability rather than, you're going to be the one genius out of the millions.
Sure. Well, people crave the risk and reward factor. And I don't think it's just the reward. I think people love the idea of taking a risk. And we see it with the stock market itself. And some people may even say that playing the stock market is more chance than skill. The government has obviously placed its position on saying. But with regard to, you know, the advertising itself, I think one response all this action in daily and weekly fantasy sports from this gold rush, this end rush by FanDuel and DraftKings to associate with as many teams and leagues and individual players as possible, that's going to cause more regulation. As more money goes into these daily and weekly fantasy sports, you are going to see more states get involved with regard to putting out their opinion on the legality of these games. You'll also see the states and or the federal government regulate this particular sector to a greater degree. And I think part of that will definitely be in the realm of advertising. We saw an issue between FanDuel and DraftKings, I think roughly a year ago, I covered on Forbes, where FanDuel had threatened and actually, I think, filed a lawsuit against DraftKings for false advertising. And because DraftKings was advertising itself as being the number one fantasy, daily fantasy sports operation, and FanDuel took issue with that. But I think what's more important is, as you mentioned, this idea that the consumer is being led to believe that this is just easy money. And I think that the states and the federal government will be very concerned about that, as there are more stories like the one that you mentioned on ABC that I was not aware of, but with individuals losing a lot of money, and they may claim that they were led to believe that it was just going to be very easy for them to win on these particular sites. So I think one result of all of this, and it's, you know, we're talking about this today for a lengthy amount of time. Obviously, daily and weekly fantasy sports is growing by the day. Just today, there was an announcement by one of these new operations called Fantasy Draft that seems to be announcing a new endorsement or partnership every single day. Today, they announced endorsements with Jimmy Johnson and Boomer Esiason. They started off last week launching with T.Y. Hilton and Jordy Nelson, receivers in the NFL. More, you know, this is picking up steam by the day, and I do anticipate that the states and or the federal government will become more involved in regulation.
We have another caller, Jay in Boulder. Jay, you're on KGNU.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's a very interesting conversation you're having. I'm not super familiar with fantasy football. I don't play or follow. But one thing that seems to be a concern is when you're talking about revenues, I think it was DraftKings or Fanfare, when you're talking about revenues in excess of $60 million a year, there's going to be corruption. There's going to be cheating. And that needs to be something that is kept in mind during this conversation. And also, it seems that the fact of where this revenue is coming from is being left out. Because if there's one company, I believe it was Fanfares or something, that's making $60 million in 2014, that money is coming from the people, the individuals who are quote-unquote fans of football. You know, they watch the games weekly or whenever they do. And it just seems as though it's another way for the general populace to lose money again. You know, they pay for
sure.
Cable, they pay for the games, and now they have this idea that they can make some money. You know, it might be easy money. They might know it's not a giveaway, but they play because of the enticement of financial gains. And that just
definitely
a bit skewed.
Right, and we're all ignorant if we ignore the fact that these are businesses, first and foremost. FanDuel, DraftKings, all these fantasy sports operations are in it to make money, obviously. And you look at the third quarter of 2014, FanDuel is one of the few websites that actually reveals its financial information. And it calculates its revenue as a result of entry fees minus the prizes that are handed out. In the third quarter, FanDuel handed out roughly $100 million in prizes, but also took in almost $110 million in entry fees. So the result is a revenue of roughly $9 million in the third quarter alone. This is a business. They're making money. They're making money off of individuals who, and it's hardcore fans and casual fans, who are watching the games and want to feel like they're involved, that they have a stake not necessarily in the outcome of the games, but in the outcome of the players' performances. Going back to the previous question and answer segment, you know, I think, again, there needs to be a better job of regulation, especially with regards to the advertisements that are out there. The fans can't be led to believe that they are guaranteed to be making money by playing these games. They need to understand, just as they do when they're consuming, when there's alcohol commercials or tobacco-related commercials, that there are inherent risks of playing. You can lose money.
Darren, I'm going to step in for 1 second. Jay, I just want to ask you if one of your concerns, you're talking a little bit about, you know, people's hard-earned cash. Is one of your concerns that the leagues are now playing an increasingly large role, NBA taking equity stake? They're already having revenue streams, and they're trying to pull this kind of money out of fans. Is that something that, sort of runs counter to the way you feel it should be going?
That's exactly along how I feel. You know, the NFL, for example, is a nonprofit that makes just ginormous amounts of revenue every year. And if you look at the stock market, you know, before my question or my comment, you guys were mentioning the stock market and how it's a similar type of scenario. You know, there's just too much money to be made by these businesses, by the fanfare, by the whoever, DraftKings. And it seems as though if this is an industry that is truly something for the people, that there should be caps on how much these businesses can make off of the betting, and then have the payouts smaller, because the amount of people who are actually getting paid out isn't very big. So I don't know. It's just a thought, something to keep in mind. When you have that much revenue involved, there's going to be corruption and there's going to be cheating. And I appreciate the conversation you guys are having.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Jay.
I think that's an interesting point that you mentioned, this idea of caps. And for one, I think that sort of runs contrary to the specific economic principles that just America runs off of, which is that we don't try to put caps on private businesses and control the profits that they're able to make. But second of all,
these businesses that are making far too much money in this, you know, United States of America, as you mentioned, and that is something that was designed into the capitalistic system, you know, and not to address that, but these businesses, you know, Fanfare, DraftKings, it's something new. It's not a bank. It's not a grocery store. It's something completely new, and I think that warrants new rules and regulations. I'm going to go ahead.
And the second point I wanted to make was one thing that I think a lot of people don't realize, is that FanDuel, DraftKings, all these operations actually take a big risk on themselves, because the UIGEA, that federal act that provides that card out for fairness of sports, actually prohibits these operations from tying the payouts to the amount of entries or entry fees. So let's say that a FanDuel or a DraftKings provide this $1 million contest, and only 5 people sign up. That's a huge loss to them. Now, if more people sign up and pay entry fees in excess of the reward that's being provided to the winner, well, obviously they make money. But it's a risk reward analysis. I think if we put a cap on profit, the risk really starts to outweigh the reward, and then you stagnate the business as a whole.
Thank you, Jay, for that call. I know you had to step off. Just a reminder, you're listening to The Real Deal in Sports on KGNU Radio, Denver Boulder. Our topic today is gambling and fantasy sports. We have about 12 minutes left in our hour, but if you want to call in still, you can reach us at 303-442-4242. Darren, I want to step away from the issues we've been talking about here and move a little bit into the backroom machinations that may occur moving forward as we see this, what was a cottage industry and growing into a more mature industry, this fantasy sports daily, weekly games grow. And you mentioned how in England you have the coexistence between your more traditional sports gambling and this type of fantasy sports. But you also pointed out how aggressive these companies are in the fantasy sports realm in protecting their turf. You mentioned the lawsuits that went on between DraftKings and FanDuel. As we move forward, sure, maybe these two areas could coexist, but are you going to see the fantasy games recognizing that they want to keep sports gambling in their place? Because it's hard to argue that it wouldn't help their business model if sports gambling remained in its place. Will they fight with the increasingly larger war chests to make sure that gambling in some way stays in its place so that they have a little bit of a more of an open field for the type of business that they do?
It's an interesting question, right? I mean, not if they want to operate in the state of New Jersey. it's a hard question to answer because, in one respect, they would sort of be aligning with many of the leagues that they're getting into partnerships with, because those leagues have taken the position that sports betting should not be allowed as it jeopardizes the integrity of the game. Meanwhile, you have Commissioner Adam Silver of the NBA come out and provide an opposite opinion. I think the one reason why you may not see that happen is because, well, there's a couple reasons. But one, if it was very clear that daily and weekly fantasy sports is operating on solid legal grounds and has no fear about that legality being jeopardized by the states and or federal government, perhaps. But you already have a number of states that have come out and said you cannot operate these games within our borders, and you may have more come out in the future that say likewise. Isn't it better for them to spend their money, if they do, on any lobbying efforts to try to make sure that they are cleared in more states and on a federal level, as opposed to focusing their efforts on sports gambling? And I think, second of all, if in fact sports gambling is allowed, perhaps you see some of these sites that have built up very strong user bases expand their services beyond fantasy and get into sports gambling themselves. I mean, they can then capitalize off of these amazing user bases and basically advertise and promote to those individuals and say, don't go elsewhere, stay on our site, you can play fantasy and you can bet on games. There are going to be constraints on that. What we've seen, they may have to be aligned with land-based casinos, et cetera, but at least it presents an opportunity for those sites to maybe make even more money as opposed to getting involved in lobbying in an area that I don't think they belong.
Yeah, very, very fair points. We have another caller. It's David in Denver. David, you're on KGNU.
Yeah, I would like you guys to address something else, and that's the gambling addiction aspect of this, gobbling up society's time. I mean, gambling, addictive, sports, addictive, digital devices, addictive. Put together, mm-hmm. It's just gobbling up society. I went to a Broncos mm-hmm. game recently, and there's side panels on this huge HD screen during the game, giving fantasy so-labeled statistics about other teams in the league as the Broncos game in front of you is going on, a digital mm-hmm. detachment addiction, and people playing it all in the stadium, the bleeding over into other elements, you know, of life. And if you're spending all this time addicted to fantasy football and everybody, all your friends, and it's so exciting, and you're just wasting your life away, and, you know, the Keystone pipeline just barely lost by one vote. There's a lot of work to do in the country, and you haven't addressed that gobbling up people's lives with this. Anyway,
no, David. It's a good point, David, because we talk about public policy and why are the reasons we have laws such as limiting gambling, and certainly this addictive element is probably one of the reasons when legislatures are considering whether to allow gambling or not that they're trying to stem. Darren.
The very first column that I penned this year for Forbes was actually on what I believe to be the biggest rivalry of 2014, which was the in-stadium versus at-home experience. And going into this year, I truly believe, based on, you know, my own feelings and also speaking to many others, that the at-home or at your favorite sports bar experience is catching up or has actually surpassed the experience that you receive at stadiums. And stadiums have a need to change and do whatever's necessary to maintain or expand on the interest of the consumer and get them to the stadium to actually watch those games live in person that many people around the world are watching at home or at the sports bars. And that's why by and large, you're seeing these fantasy stats and fantasy-related material scroll across the scoreboard and otherwise, because that's what the fans are craving. Now, to address the issue of addiction, I mean, I'm no expert in that area, so I wouldn't necessarily want to talk about the normative or legal issues attached there, too. The only thing that I would say is, whose responsibility is it to attack those issues? And is some sort of regulation or a complete ban of fantasy sports altogether the solution to the problem? Or is it some sort of education, enhancement of education, et cetera? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know that it's necessarily a problem per se, but it's not something that I've looked into. I can only address your issue with, you know, the in-stadium experience changing and focusing very heavily on fantasy.
David, are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I mean, what do you want to see? I mean, do you feel that we should be maintaining our focus razor sharp on the games and enjoying that if you are a sports fan? Or is it just inevitable that over time there's an evolutionary way in which we see sports? So we see our interest in sports evolve over time.
Well, how many hours are people spending doing this? I get the sense it's gobbling up all free time for a large number of people. Is that really what's going on in the country?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you take a macro look at this, there is no doubt that there are far greater issues. But if we look back over the scope of sports in general, we've always had the addicted fans. I guess the question is this gobbling up more time, but is it gobbling up more time from more people? And are fantasy sports, and this is, I'm sure, what the leagues are hoping, the fantasy sports are bringing more people into that house, maybe at the exclusion of other important issues. But Darren, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that really this is really broadening the scope? Clearly, leagues like the NBA that are now getting involved with these fantasy sports think this is the entry point, a gateway for their sports growing. And as David points out, probably at the exclusion of other important issues.
Well, I mean, I think I addressed this point earlier, which was that you don't even have to think back many years ago, where all the leagues, with maybe Major League Baseball at the forefront, basically saying we want no part of this. That this is not something that we're interested in. We think that there are legal issues attached, and you know we're not ever going to partner with one of these operations, whether they actually said that statement aloud or not. That was their position. And I think that they've come to realize over time that taking such a contrary position was only hurting them. That, you know, this is what the fans want. And it's not only the hardcore fans, but it's brought so many new casual fans to the table. And as I also mentioned, the female demographic, which by and large, you know, for many years has not been extremely involved in as a spectator with the major American sports. And now you look at how many female participants there are on these daily, weekly, season-long fantasy operations, and the leagues themselves are salivating because it's not only getting them interested in the sports watching on TV, but now they're also purchasing merchandise as well. So from the league standpoint, you know, it hasn't been that long, but they've completely changed their position from being against the proliferation of fantasy to entirely embracing it.
David, I'm going to have to end our conversation here with you. We only have about a minute and a half left. I want to ask Darren one final question before we go, which is we've talked about how the leagues have changed their attitude and potentially how marketing has changed towards sports. Do you think these type of fantasy games could grow so much that they actually change the way the games are played? Or do you think that and I'm not talking about people cheating and you know, the fix being in, but just somehow fundamentally changing these games in some way because of the interest in fantasy being so great? I just need a short answer on that one.
It's an interesting question. I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, which is at least with fantasy football, you're talking about it mostly revolving around offensive players. So will the league perhaps change its rules at some point in time to place an emphasis on offense as opposed to defense, and will the score start going up? I have no idea, but you raise a very intelligent and interesting question.
Wonderful. Darren, thank you so much. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank very much my guest, Darren Heitner, who is a sports attorney and contributor at Forbes.com. If you're interested in sports business at all, you should look up his articles. They are excellent. You can also follow him on Twitter at Darren Heitner. That's HEITNER. But until next time, I'm Josh Chetwin, and you've been listening to The Real Deal in Sports. Next up, please stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative with our DJ, Uncle Jeff.
Cabin made of logs and clay. We kept the fire burning there. Oh, the fire burning there. Take me back to the arms of my snow country girl. The wind is calling through the pine, where snow flakes fall like feather down. My snow country girl was so kind when I was young and snow.